Tribute. My Immortal Mother by Carol Cooper.
There are so many stories about Wendy, my immortal mother. Fragments, told and retold, misremembered. Legends I wish I could ask her about now. 1934, Wimbledon. Wendy, aged six, sits on the floor of a bedroom in a large, well-appointed house. She stares up at her father, Charles Wheeler, who's standing at the walnut tall boy, brushing his lapels. Weak morning sunlight picks out the silver on his gentleman's toiletry set. Wendy's heart is bursting with admiration. Daddy is a gentleman because he is a gentleman. Charles looks at his daughter and smiles. Do you love me? He asks. Wendy's alarmed, bashful. Love is a word that's seldom mentioned in this household. What to answer? No, she giggles, hugging her knees. Oh, says Charles. Well, I shall go away then. Wendy flushes, confused. She scrambles to her feet and runs out. Being a child, Wendy is seen and not heard, and certainly never informed of family arrangements. She's unaware that the following day Charles will set sail for Calcutta to work as a jute broker in an effort to revive the flagging family fortunes. In his absence, Wendy suffers private torments, convinced she's driven him away. A lesson learnt. Always express your love. Verbally, affectionately, with volume and emphasis, and on a daily basis. 1935, Wimbledon. Wendy, aged seven, is bored and lonely. She wanders to the drawing room, hovers at the door, and spies on Flora, her pathologically unmaternal mother, who's at the piano releasing her rage on Rachmaninoff. Wendy knows never to interrupt mother at the piano. Flora finishes, spies her daughter. Come here, little girl. Wendy shyly approaches. A flicker of hope. Will she get a kiss? Flora bends her face close to her daughter's. Oh, you're so ugly. Go away. Once again, Wendy rushes away from a parent, hot-cheeked, heart pounding in shame and confusion. Where many might have closed off their hearts, as Flora had, my mother pinned hers firmly on her sleeve and resolved that when she had children, she'd envelop them in a thick, almost suffocating blanket of love. Sensing she needs some attention, Wendy's hormones start to kick in, age 10, and begin to transform her into a full-figured, raven-haired beauty. That great aphrodisiac, the war, provides her with many suitors who convey to her that she is, in fact, far from ugly. 1940, just after Dunkirk, the Atlantic. Wendy, a well-developed 12-year-old, is already fighting off the attentions of a lecherous purser aboard the troop ship SS Modassa. She's travelled from Tilbury Docks to join her parents in Calcutta with her reckless 18-year-old sister, Zorica. Named after the heroine of the operetta Gypsy Love, Zorica in later life earned the nickname Erotica. Lying in the bunk below her sister, Wendy endures shameful squeaks, giggles and worse from above as Zorica gleefully fails to fight off the attentions of a lecherous sailor. But passions are running high. Death is stalking. Three of the ships in the Modassa's convoy have already been bombed and sunk. There are so many stories from that three-month journey. So much for a 12-year-old to witness, albeit a well-developed one. Safely in Calcutta, aged 14, Wendy's already engaged to Eric Batchelor, a a fighter pilot to whom Flora writes, forbidding him to contact her daughter, saying he's affecting her glands. Unaware of this, Wendy is heartbroken, believing him to be either killed or untrue. Wendy's heart mends sufficiently for her to fall for a married man. I try and fail to recall the details of this story, but all that I can retrieve is the essence of it, the overwhelming guilt, which compelled her to feverishly knit socks for soldiers till her fingers ached. 1944, Women's Royal Indian Navy HQ, Calcutta. In the midday heat, Wendy's armpits are rubbed raw as she carries out drill marches in a rough cotton uniform. She tells the only lie I'm aware she ever told. Posing as an 18-year-old, she signs the Official Secrets Act and sets about deciphering coded messages directing military manoeuvres in Southeast Asia, holding the lives of our chaps in her hands at 16. 1945, The Swimming Club, Calcutta. So begins the legend of my father. Wendy, aged 17, meets Don Cooper, another RAF pilot stationed in Calcutta. He has a lean torso, fair hair, and pale blue eyes lit with mischief. He's also 31 and a schoolteacher from Essex, so doesn't pass muster as far as Flora's concerned. The marriage is forbidden. Flora and Wendy are at loggerheads. But Wendy is a young woman of mettle. 1947, Wimbledon. Wendy's will prevails. She marries Don. They return to India, a country in chaos. It's a worrying time for the new bride, as Don is involved in partition, flying Hindus out of and Muslims into the newly created Pakistan. 1955. A small suburban house in West Sussex. Wendy and Don are skint, with two young boys to feed. Wendy serves up dinner, sharing one fish between the family. She keeps just the skin for herself, hiding it under the sauce, so my father and brothers won't know. 1959. A Sussex village. Wendy's persuaded Don they must take on an unloved, rat-infested inn. Working from dawn till dusk, they turn it into one of Britain's first gastropubs. They make a bit of money, but don't save much. Wendy enjoys throwing lavish parties, and the staff all get free pints. Despite being a woman who says flowers and not flowers, and prefers a bath to a shower, she's a popular landlady, as loved by the darts-playing villagers as she is by the pink gin-sipping gentry. If someone has spirit and a ready smile, she'll make friends with them, swiftly and with honesty. Wendy's confidence has grown with marriage, motherhood, and entrepreneurship. She's a charming and, at times, formidable force. A woman who likes things to be just so. October 2015. Garden House Hospice, Letchworth. Wendy, aged 87, is overjoyed with the pretty room with a view she has come to die in. She's been beating the odds for 7 years as her bashed-up heart has kept on beating. Cancer and a car crash have mangled her body. Osteoporosis has crumbled her spine. Her sight's failing and she can barely breathe. She's more than ready to rejoin Don, who'd set off for an uncertain afterlife 15 years before her. As she settles into her room, as usual, she has many outstanding requirements, and, as usual, her many requests are made with such grace, no one can refuse her. Could you be a dear and rearrange the bedside table? And could the bed be moved diagonally to give a better view through the window? Myself and a crack team of healthcare professionals set about getting everything just so. The last thing, her feet are a little chilly. Maybe another blanket? she suggests, but nothing too heavy. A nurse fetches a pink and red crocheted blanket that she places gently over Mum's feet. You're so kind. Thank you. But there's just one more thing. Do you have any sunglasses I could borrow? Sunglasses, Mum? Yes. The colours of this blanket are really too bright. Even when her fluttering heart is delivering just the merest wafts of oxygen to her brain, such flashes of cheeky wit shine through and light up the room brighter than any pink blanket. Before entering the hospice, she'd had a serious talk with a doctor about reducing her many pills to just palliative meds. The doctor, who she found handsome, looked into her eyes and gently said, "What do you most want to do now?" She paused and thought, shifted a bit in her wheelchair, sparkled at him. "I'd like to tango." November 2015. A small retirement flat, Hitchin. Wendy has had to leave the hospice for not dying enough. There have been so many false deathbed vigils, I start to call her my immortal mother. Nobody can figure out how that full and battered heart is still beating. 1st of December 2015. Wendy dies. Alone in the night. Apparently on her way to a table displaying pictures of Don and her father. We'll never know the story. The stories have stopped. My mother, mortal after all. Such a big life, leaving such a big hole in our lives. There are many more stories, but they are just shards and remnants, disconnected scenes I conjured as she spoke, Wendy teaching ballroom dancing to demobbed troops in Tooting, having teeth pulled without anaesthetic in Darjeeling, breaking codes and hearts, weathering bombs, beatings and malaria. I must tell and retell the stories, the fragments, all the legends I long to ask her about now.